Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Michael Chakraborty.
And I'm Mark Watson.
And welcome back to Menkind, where we chat to a range of brilliant guests about masculinity.
Some of them are men, some of them aren't men, and some of them aren't particularly bothered either way.
We're interested in men.
Yes, obviously you are.
And what makes them tick? Where does masculinity come from? How does it affect us? And how could we be better?
We might not get a final answer, but we'll have a bloody good go at it. Won't we, Michael?
Oh, we'll do our best.
Welcome to the new week, everybody. I'm Mark Watson, and where there is Mark Watson, there is very often also ...
Michael Chakraborty, I think, is the answer to that question.
You nailed that. I think there's a slightly worrying pause, but in you came.
How has your week been, Mark?
My week has consisted of quite a bit of touring, Michael, but we'll undoubtedly chat about that in the outro. And by chat about it, I mean strategically plug the tour in quite an undignified way.
Before we get to your self-flattery, though, let's talk about our guest. We have a wonderful guest this week called Reese Nicholson, who is known for being funny generally everywhere, right?
Yes, we're fortunate to speak to Reese, who is a very highly regarded, very funny and talented comedian, extremely well known in his homeland of Australia. This is a second consecutive Australian guest, another tough one for us in terms of watching someone else have a wine later in their day. But we're professionals, aren't we?
Yeah, and I tend to have a wine at most times during my day. It's just a verbal one. But anyway, Reese is also a judge on the new series of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under, which he's smashing, honestly. He made a very funny joke about hairy chaps, and I still think about it from time to time now.
So it's something for everyone.
We'll speak to you on the outro. We hope you enjoy this week's episode with Reese.
I've just got your joke, Michael.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Michael. I'm Mark Watson, and when I say good morning, Michael Chakraborty, I literally mean it because this is the earliest episode recording we've ever done. Is that true, Michael? Yeah.
I think that's true. Yeah, you're not even drinking, which is unusual.
Yet. And the reason for this 9 a.m. start is we're joined by a guest, not just an Australian, but a guest that is in Australia, Reese Nicholson.
Hello!
Morning stroke evening, Reese. How are you?
I'm very well. You know, for me, it's 6:15, so I'm having a wine. Go fuck yourself. Wow, don't start the podcast with this energy.
We'll keep that in. You know, we've had some quite gentle intros to the podcast. I like the idea of one with a bit of teeth, to be honest.
Yeah, and to me be the one trying to come in with quite masculine energy, there's an irony to that that I do enjoy for this podcast as well.
It's a good turnaround for regulars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very jealous, it goes without saying, of your wine.
But it's less to be jealous of, I suppose, in terms of Reese's circumstances, considering he's been in the same room for how many days now?
This is 6 days. I'm in hotel quarantine. I'm not under arrest or something.
But incredibly, this is not even your first or your second. This is your third bout of quarantine.
My third quarantine.
And this is because you've been going back and forth?
Yeah, I won't be happy till I get it. I just try and sit in big petri dishes in hotels. Yeah, I've done some work in New Zealand, and then I got a job when I was in New Zealand. I had to go to Canada. Had is a strong word, but went to Canada, and now I'm coming back to Australia. So, yeah. What was meant to be a 2.5-week trip became 7 months very quickly.
Incredible stuff. Is it fair to say one of these jobs is drag-related, Reese? Because
yes.
Our listeners do tend to really like that.
Yes. Yeah, I was a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under. And then, yeah, I got this kind of acting job in Canada off the back of that, then had to go quite quickly.
Perhaps we should ask who you are. Perhaps that would be helpful.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
point.
Who
are you, Reese?
Yeah, yeah. I am Reese Nicholson. And do I say what I do?
We often say, how do you describe yourself at this moment?
Oh, yeah. How do I describe myself? Available. Work-wise. I don't know. Like, do you know what? I've become more comfortable with comedian in the last couple years. And maybe it's because I'm working less. But I will write on airport forms comedian now, whereas I used to write, like, retail assistant. Like, I had a fake job.
Yeah, retailer of jokes.
Yes.
What pushes you over the precipice? What finally makes you feel like you can?
I think, and this probably sounds a bit douchey answer, but like, that at least in Australia, there's more chances of me perhaps being recognised. And right. So if I didn't say that, it went from being like, if you wrote comedian, people were like, who's this dick? And now if I wrote something else, it'd be like, who's this dick? Like, pretending he's not the person.
I feel like if you have a Netflix special, you shouldn't say you work at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Generally.
Well, although...
I used to have a story I told on stage about claiming to be a zookeeper and having to keep that going just because I panicked and didn't want to say comedian. These days, it'd be much worse if I was outed as a comedian when I was halfway through pretending that I was an animal expert.
I do these lies when I have a haircut. They're mm-hmm. saying, oh, what do you do? And I don't like to say the truth. And so I end up caught in this really like 45 minute long lie about being a pots and pans salesman or like a professional runner, a professional athlete or whatever it is.
Wow,
like
it's really... those are big swings, Michael. Good Lord.
I'm going to try and attempt the worst segue of all time. Are you ready?
You can't have a worse segue than the actual guy that invented the segue, who flew off a cliff on a segue.
Oh, did he?
So that is maybe the worst segue.
I had no idea.
Yeah, you're not going to bring the podcast to its knees in the same way as he went to his, Michael. You'll be fine.
Anyway.
Now, Michael, let's try a non-fatal segue into the question.
I'm just going to jump in with it. Reese Nicholson, what was your first brush with masculinity that you can remember? It's quite a deep question to start with.
Oh, no, it's fine. Look, I've already talked about the death of Segway Man. Imagine if I was like 2 weeks ago. No, I think it was, I remember, I think in like primary school, me and some other kids were like comparing our dads. I feel like that was a big thing in primary school to be like, my dad can do this.
The Dad Olympics.
Yeah.
We've all got it.
I'd recently at the time seen my dad move a washing machine. And that was like, well, my dad can lift a washing machine, which to a bunch of other, you know, probably 7-year-olds was the biggest thing they'd ever seen in their lives.
Yeah, that's checkmate basically, isn't it?
Yeah. It was like, so the rest of your dads may as well be our mums.
Unless you've seen your dad lift a car, the washing machine's unbeatable.
Yeah.
Washing machines have concrete in them as well. Like it is a pretty hefty thing to be lifting.
Yeah, it's yeah. a major achievement from Mr. Nicholson. Yeah.
He did very well. And so I think that's kind of it. Like, it was the first time I'd really thought about like we were comparing our dads and our mums. Which is also a confusing thing to think about now because, like, my mum was the breadwinner in our family and, like, my dad was a stay-at-home dad. So it was just kind of quite confusing. Mm. Like, well, my dad's so strong, he cooks us dinner every night. So it was like this kind of great juxtaposition between the two things. But I think that's it.
But was it that physical strength, do you think, that was the kind of signifier of masculinity that you're trying to prove?
I think that's it because I think... we're around the same age. How old are you, Michael?
28.
Yeah, I'm 30.
Right. How old are you, Mark? Just quickly.
Carry on with the podcast, please.
How old are you, Mark?
I said carry on with the podcast.
I reckon he's like 40.
I'm 41, so I'm considerably older than both of you, but I'm cheering myself up by imagining an Olympic event, which is just people's dads come out and lift whatever they can.
Yeah, the dad's Olympics.
But it has to be a household object. It has to be the thing you can find in your house.
I think it'll be very popular with the gays as well. You can really picture it, can't you?
Oh, yeah. No, that's the daddy Olympics. You know that probably exists.
It will.
It will. People are Googling as they listen to this.
But I do think, like, we're maybe the last generation that, especially at that age, like, of course I had a bunch of friends that probably had queer parents, but we just didn't really talk about it.
Mm. Yeah.
Whereas I feel like it's a very much more open thing now to have queer parents, if that makes any
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's also more common now, I guess, to have stay-at-home dads.
Yeah.
I'm older than you, obviously, but I don't remember hardly anyone being in that situation at my school. How did you feel about it? Did it strike you as an unusual thing in the context of your own mates, or did you not care particularly?
Not really, because he also, like, he worked from home. Like, so my parents are both, my mum is a school teacher and she's a principal now, but when we were little, they were both, like, artists. They're both ceramicists.
Ooh.
Yeah, they're potters.
Wow.
They're, like, the communists of the art world.
Arty even for artists.
Yeah, even artists are like, really?
Ceramicists? Get out.
Wet dirt. That's what we're going with. Yeah. Okay, sure. So he worked from home, but, yeah, he was the one that took us to school. He was the one that made our lunches, the one that... Now, thinking about it, it must have been odd for him, maybe, as well, because he's a manly, he's a pretty masculine guy. For a guy that makes ceramics.
For a guy that mostly works with wet dirt.
Yeah. He'd be so sure that that's not what he does. Imagine if I found out now that he's like, no, Dad's a plumber. But he's a pretty masculine guy, like, because you kind of have to be a ceramicist.
When you say a masculine guy, what do you mean?
Well, that's a good point. Strong, I guess.
Right.
But isn't that interesting that I kind of still think of that as masculine?
Yeah, it's exactly the sort of suppositions that we like to dig into in this podcast.
Yeah.
Michael's very pleased with himself, and he should be.
Yeah, I always am, generally.
Yeah, like he's always had big muscles and like he's always like drunk big beers and like, but you know, I've also seen him delicately putting teapot spouts onto tiny little teapots to sell at markets. So there is this kind of deep juxtaposition of my father. You know, he's the child of Scottish American immigrants. So there's a lot of, you know, that kind of children of adults of the Great Depression kind of thing where they work very hard and then the next generation down don't. I'm a comedian.
Stick about being comedians, yeah.
So you were saying that your dads were competing in this kind of dad Olympics and masculinity seemed like strength to you when you were that age. Did you then identify with that when you were younger? Because I'm assuming you were kind of put in the boy mold and said, here you are then, that's you.
Yeah, I mean, not really. Like, I think I'm really lucky. Any kind of like mold I was put into was 100% myself.
Right.
I think I'm one of those cliche examples of everyone was pretty clear how things were going to work out for me from a pretty early age. And so there was just blind support, whereas other people less lucky as me would have been like, well, let's try and stamp that fire out. There was a bit more kind of like, let's ease him into this. I remember pretty vividly when I was like 10 or 11, my mum essentially not explaining to me what being gay was, but just kind of just being like, you know, if you were that, that would 100% be fine.
Oh, that's lovely.
By the way, like just kind of planting seeds early on. I was thinking about this just the other day. Oddly, the older I get, I think I connect like masculinity these days, and I guess kind of toxic masculinity, to things being difficult. Like, I don't know, this is a weird example of it. I sit down to pee. I've started sitting down to pee because it's just easy.
You started a conscious decision.
Not as in like, well, from here on out, but. Yeah.
You've not made the statement to the press, for example.
You know what? My PR, she would not release it. She said it would be damaging. Well, I started doing it because I realized, first of all, I use cubicles to pee anyway. I'm not a urinal guy.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's even easier these days because since I don't go to nightclubs or anything. It was harder back in the day when I would go to nightclubs and you open a cubicle door and you're like, oh, wow, that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Which I, side note, could have never understood how that would happen in a nightclub. Anyways, like, you know when you see like a proper mess and you're like, has this happened?
I like to think it's gradual. I think it's like a collective art project that one person just does one more thing to it. Like, I'm going to throw this on the floor. I'm going to stamp inside the cistern, like all that kind of stuff. Do you think?
And I guess we've all tried ecstasy once and gone, ooh, I need to go to the bathroom right now.
A small sub feature here for regular listeners. How do nightclub toilets get so bad?
Well, boys' bathrooms are always grosser.
They are.
I think there's something about masculine men, you know, there's the cliches of complaining about this is the most I ever hurt myself or something. And I realized like standing up to pee is just harder. It's just a harder, like, what are you losing by sitting down? You can look at your phone.
Right.
I drink a lot, so I'm not going to make a mess. It's easier to aim. It's just easier. And I feel like I've taken us down a strange path early on.
No, it's true. Though.
Oddly, it's not that strange because not very long ago, we had an episode where I was interviewed by Michael and one of my defining early memories of masculinity was a boy weeing on me at a urinal because he just hadn't mastered the technique yet.
Was this like 3 years ago?
No, it's slightly less recently than that.
Yeah, okay.
So the subject of urinals versus cubicles has come up more often than you might think.
There was also a thing at the urinals where people would either have their trousers around their ankles or their trousers by their hips.
Yep.
And that was a power play as well. Like, who felt brave enough to pull their trousers all the way down?
Which is weird.
Whereas when you're seated, you don't need to worry.
No. And it's just, take a load off, champ.
They should have that on signs in public toilets to remind you that cubicles are an option.
Take a load off.
So your original point, Reese, was that this is one example of how masculine men sort of almost seek opportunities to make things harder unnecessarily.
Yeah.
And you feel like that's a pattern of toxic masculinity.
Yeah, like I think it's like a long bow, but like it's a movie trope of like men in bars showing scars of where they've hurt each other and stuff. Like there's this argument where they just, I've lived a rougher life than you.
I've stood up for every wee I've ever had.
Yeah, and it was tough.
I'm exhausted.
I was on a cliff and I had to piss off a cliff once and it was raining and there were tigers. Yeah.
And there was a cubicle there. Would I use it? Like hell I would.
No, I'm not a lady. Whereas I think the kind of movie trope of kind of effeminate men, which I've always related to them, you know, I would almost describe myself as a Nancy, which is they're always kind of on fainting couches, never worked a day in their lives. And I'm not helping. I'm a comedian. My hands are very soft. I've always thought, surely the aim in life is to work less. Surely.
It's interesting this, Reese, because, well, firstly, by the way, you say it's kind of a cliche that you were always going to be that boy. But actually on our podcast, it's sort of not a cliche. I think Mike would agree. We've had far more stories of people
having to resist to the conclusion because people weren't the supportive of it. Yeah. Or we haven't actually spoken to that many people who were securely on this path of being gay, nice and early in life.
Well, it's quite rare in our industry.
Yeah.
He says, clutching a wine at 6 p.m.
Oh, no, I still got my problems.
But you've been robbed of 2 to 3 stories about how tough, probably more than that. You could have had a whole show out of it if you hadn't had such an easy coming out process.
Well, this is the thing. I never had a coming out show.
Exactly. Your artistic development has been ruined by your parents' supportiveness, like mine, really.
I've always been tempted to have one recently, like to just do a coming out show at like 35.
Surprise.
Surprise. You guessed it.
I think this is really interesting what you say about work and the object of life. I'm a workaholic and I sort of drive myself extremely hard. I'm in my 40s now, as we know. I've read quite a lot of stuff recently about how you ought to balance work and life if you can even separate those things. And I've thought about recently, what is the purpose of life?
Not recently, Mark. It's been an ongoing issue.
Yeah, I'm tormented by it.
Yeah. And I would preface very quickly as well, I'm also a workaholic. Like, I also work a lot.
You work very hard, for sure.
But I guess when I mean, this is the other thing, what do I mean by masculinity? What do I mean by work? I mean like... Yeah. That physical work, I guess, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you'd say that one way in which you differ from the traditional masculine tropes is that you're not out there looking for opportunities to physically exhaust yourself, because why would you?
Why?
And you'd rather preserve that energy to do stuff with, because again, you obviously work incredibly hard. You're not just trying to have an easy life, but the way in which we measure working hard and laboring is maybe different for our generation of men than it ever has been before.
I think so. Like, you know, since robots. No. But I think it was very like for my dad's generation. If my grandfather did what my dad did, my dad probably would have been embarrassed. Does that make sense? If he'd been like a stay-at-home dad,
sure.
And I'm not like, this is a broad generalization, and my dad might be like, don't say that. But as in that generation, a stay-at-home dad would have been bonkers.
Yeah.
And then there's like a trickle down a little bit where even probably by the time my dad was doing that, it would have been a little bit strange if I had the knowledge to understand that. Whereas I feel like now it's pretty common.
Yeah. And in another generation's time, well, the hope is people won't even differentiate between one parent and another that much in terms of what their supposed roles are.
Not at all. Whatever the situation is.
Yeah. Which has got to be progress.
That also feeds so into, you know, I would hope that I'm the last generation of people that ask queer people about like who's the man and who's the woman and that type of thing. Mm. And I'm sure this has come up on this podcast before, but like...
Yeah, I can't believe it happens, though. I mean, I can't believe someone would ask that as a straight guy.
I still get asked all the time. Like,
but the new guise of it within the gay community is, are you a top or are you a bottom? Which is the same question that they're asking.
It's the same question.
Yeah.
I think I saw, like, Lil Nas X or someone was talking about that recently, the inherent misogyny of that.
Yeah.
Because you are connecting, not to, like, feed into this, but I am a top most of the time.
Right.
And how that completely cancels out... that argument, because in every other aspect.
Yeah, so Mark's looking confused. So generally a top is the person who is giving and the bottom is the person who is receiving, and the concept is
that the top's the spoon.
The top's the spoon. What does that make the bottom?
I don't know, a cup? I don't know. What are you keeping in a spoon?
Saucer. I'm actually not confused, Michael, because I know all about this because of you and this podcast.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forget. But it's really fascinating then, because people can then not attach being feminine to being, say, I say feminine with inverted commas around it, with being a top, because it just doesn't make sense to this kind of idea of strength or power, you know?
Like, I get quite strange messages on my social media.
A lot of gay people begin sentences like this on the podcast, yeah.
Yes, yes. And I'd say you're probably the same, Michael, that when you're in the media and you are a queer man, you just get messages from, I would say, this is a broad generalization, kind of older queer men, just listing some of the things that they would like to do with you.
Yeah.
Listing them.
Just listing them.
Making like a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're long videos. Some of them are quite skilled. And they're always in the guise as if I am a bottom. And not that that's a problem, but it is just an interesting assumption. Like, that's the new assumption, I think.
Because they think that you present in a sort of vaguely feminine way.
Yeah, a feminine way. It's just like an interesting, I have no end to this topic.
I've got a kind of supplementary question, which is, broadly speaking, I mean, you might not be in a position to either of you to measure this.
But... And put it away, please. I don't. Please get that off the
list. Not even the first time we've measured it on the podcast.
Quickly, as a side note, the only way he could measure it in inches was thinking of it in sizes of different vinyls.
We had a guest who brought penis size into the three ideal qualities of a man and then turned it on me and said, all right, what about you? If you wanted a man to have a penis, how big would it be? And yeah, I'm old enough that I could only think in terms of 7 and 12 inch records. And I felt that 12 inch would be inconvenient for both parties.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can only think it's 7 and 12, that is terrible news.
Oh, don't worry. I can scale up and down if necessary. Well, I was just going to ask on a note of cis curiosity, is there more of a culture in gay life of this weird thing of unsolicited offers? Do you think as gay people in the media, you get more of this kind of thing? And if so, why? Because I hear gay people with a profile all the time talking about their DMs just being basically a swamp of this kind of thing. I'm sure it happens to women as well, but not in the same way.
I think it's generationally changing. But I think because of the circumstances that the old generations of queer men and women had to have sex, and you did have to be a little bit more
covert about things.
Covert, but also overt.
Yeah.
So you had to be kind of like pretty clear.
Right.
We don't have long. This is what I want. This is what I need.
Okay. So yeah, that makes complete sense. You had to get down to it because you didn't have the luxury of, I guess, public displays of flirtation and stuff in the same way.
And this is not to complain about it. It's also nice sometimes. I know, but sometimes it'll just be like, I'd say you probably get this as well, Michael. Just comments about, I don't know, just our looks. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll post about a show that's coming up. And it's like, oh, sweetie, the thing, we could fill an afternoon, like just weird things like that. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, but back to my show, ticket's still available.
yeah. Like it is, and I would never compare it, I'm sure, to just what it is to be a woman in the media. Like I'm sure it's,
yeah.
But
it's a hypersexualization. And I think, again, I'm not one to know exactly where this comes from, but I think there is an element of, there was for so long, it was something to be ashamed of. So there's a kind of pride in being like, I'm not ashamed of this, and this is how we have sex. I mean, there's been that whole kink at pride discourse recently, and kind of being able to say, this is who I am, this is what I like, and yes, I am going to rub it in your face, actually, because you rub it in mine all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a literal kink or just a metaphor?
Pass, I wouldn't know, to be honest. I find it very confusing. I just don't quite know. How do I refer to you if you are dressed as a dog? What pronouns would you like? Like, I don't know.
That is a tough thing as well, because I am in a 10-year monogamous relationship. I'm pretty... conservative isn't the right words, but like, I'm not a necessarily kinky person, and I have been in situations before where, like, whether it be pride or something, that I have been a little bit like, oh, like clutching my pearls a little bit. Not in a way that I would ever like publicly say like, ah, this is full on.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a personality trait of mine that I've got a dirty mouth and I'm very filthy in my comedy, but actually in my real life, I'm quite like conservative in my...
I'm similar.
Yeah, you guys are all taught.
Well, truly, like in my relationship standards and like the idea of a threesome absolutely terrifies me. The idea of open relationships, I know that they completely work for people. But for me, I'm a very jealous person. I'm a very quite close-minded, and I wish I wasn't. But I'm 30, it's too late.
Too late for you. But it is unusual. And lots of gay people feel free from the bounds of monogamy and traditional relationships, I think. Lots of gay men in particular look down on those in monogamous relationships because they are subscribing to this sort of heteronormative world. Do you find that?
Yeah.
A little bit sometimes. Like, and I'm sure it feels the same way that it must feel for someone to be like, open relationships don't work. Like, because they do. I've seen them work, and they work just as well as monogamous relationships, because monogamous relationships break down as well. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, to say that, well, you guys broke up and it was messy in your open relationship, so they don't work. It's like, are your parents still together?
Yeah. You might as well say, well, one of them died in the end, so that relationship failed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything has an end, right?
Exactly.
What is it really other than like a really long competition? That's what marriage is really, isn't it? Who will make it? Who's going to get there?
It's basically a Hunger Games style elimination. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing being part of the queer community. And I've really tried in the last few years to be more... sounds hokey, but like to be more in touch with my queerness, if that makes any sense. Like, I used to feel like my comedy, for example, was very for straight audiences. And it still is, but like it's finding a middle ground between, you know, how can I be useful to my community while also being profitable. But
haven't you guys got money as well, though?
Of the pink dollar, it's very lucrative.
Yeah, I've heard about
but
that.
But the exchange rate isn't always great. About 3 or 4 years ago, I started writing differently because I just realized people were kind of coming to see me like it was the zoo. It's like, how do they live? And I think it comes back into the conversation of masculinity because I was doing jokes for quite heteronormative straight couples.
That is interesting.
Like, these are jokes that are accessible for you. I'm not going to talk about the intricacies of being queer. I'm going to talk about just anal.
There's the title for this episode.
Reese Nicholson, just anal.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it, Reese, but it's true. I mean, Coop and I went to see you, well, it must be the last time we were in Melbourne, which is the last time we were permitted to enter Melbourne, which can only be 2019. And the difference between seeing you do a full-length show then and when I first saw you was considerable, actually, just in terms of your range. And I'd say that audience was not primarily straight or gay. It was, well, at least you couldn't tell from being in the audience. But I do remember thinking you were pushing yourself much more in terms of range of subject, because it was the sort of show that as a comedian you come away from yourself thinking, I could be more adventurous, actually.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you very much for saying.
It was really great.
And we'll wrap it up there. Thanks, guys. I started liking the noise of being able to throw a piece of material out, like, or even just a reference, and a third of the audience laughing at it, but laughing at it quite heartily.
Mm, yeah.
And being like, that's how many queer people are here, because that's a very niche bedroom reference that I've made.
Yeah.
I'm in the two thirds that are sitting there sneakily Googling.
Yeah. And I think that kind of comes down to gender as well. Like, I started talking about gender stuff. And I think it was only because I'd really started to think about it a little bit more as well. You know, when I meet younger queer people now, especially I co-own a comedy club in Melbourne. And so we have a lot of younger acts come through, which is even strange for me to think about. Like, I still feel like I'm like 20.
Just you wait, Reese.
Yeah. But you must have the same thing.
I do. Younger acts, I'm afraid to tell you, just keep on coming. And some of them are good. That's even worse.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
It's a weird thing. You either become threatened by it and bitter, or you just are as supportive as you can be of it, basically.
Or you block them from performing at your clubs.
Yeah. Or you deny that they exist and starve them of opportunity. Whatever works, really.
But, and I hope this doesn't come out the wrong way, but this is the first time, generally, we have a slew of gender-diverse comedians coming through that aren't bringing it up as they're walking under. In the same way that I used to, when I started comedy 12 years ago, would walk on stage and have to make a little joke at the start.
Yeah.
About, like, just so you know, I know that I'm gay. Just so you know.
I think that's really changing. I agree over here as well. There is less of an expectation that you must address the elephant in the room in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Comedy audiences are becoming more broad-minded as well as the culture of comedy.
Because the joke is always at your own expense.
Yeah.
And whether you're a queer comedian of any, like, you know, trans, like, it's a joke to make you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I feel like that's dying now.
What tipped it, do you think, or is it just slowly going?
I think it's just slowly going. Mm. There's not necessarily a moment or like a zeitgeisty thing. I think it's just purely representation. Like the fact that this podcast exists.
Yeah.
So actually we've done it, Michael, is what he's saying. Very gently.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, yeah, it's you guys. You are the moment.
Where do you sit with your gender? You've mentioned manly and masculinity, and you've kind of talked about it separately from you a little bit. Where do you sit with it?
I think, I was talking to my fiance about this the other day, about how a lot of people in their social medias and stuff these days have their pronouns. Mm. And a pretty common one these days is like he, him, or, you know, or she, her, but then they, them afterwards. And I feel like I sit in there where it's kind of like, I don't feel like a man or a woman, but I also don't feel so strongly about it.
That you'd be offended by a specific pronoun use? Or
yes. So, and I feel like I would almost be like putting on a bit of a role if I was making people say they, them. But which I believe pretty strongly is the kind of future. Like as in maybe like 200 years, there's going to be people that feel very strongly this way or this way. But for the majority of people, they're going to be kind of like, I don't know.
You see more people with like he, they, or like she, they in their pronouns because they kind of, they're sitting in the, what you called the afterwards. They're sitting in the sort of the middle bit where they're kind of like, I'm kind of more over here, but it doesn't really matter so much, you know?
We've come to that conclusion before. We've at least played with that conclusion on the podcast before. And maybe it's not 200 years. The speed of change at the moment, maybe it's a couple of generations.
Yeah. And, you know, I see people like someone in my family who's come out as non-binary. And I was on a Zoom call with my dad and like a few other people. And it kind of came up in conversation. And my dad clearly, you know, like when things just don't get to parts of the family. Mm. And my dad was kind of, he was corrected about it, about the name change. And I watched my dad's face on the Zoom, like the conversation kept going and I was watching him think about it and then I watched him like accept it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how quickly we're moving, mm-hmm. is that my 62-year-old dad, like they, them is a very new situation. It's a very new concept.
Yeah, and it's a mental leap that anyone has to make just because we're used to they.
On a punctuation level.
Literally, on a grammatical thing. Like when I first heard about it, it was still several months before I could make myself do it, but not ideologically.
No.
Just I had to keep stopping. And then after a bit you think, oh, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of things seem to be like that. They seem odd the first time they're introduced, and then surprisingly quickly they become part of mainstream. As you say, those processes are happening really fast now.
Yeah, long story short, like my own stuff is like I'm not sure. It's not a thing that I've struggled with necessarily, but it is a thing that I like. And I feel like everyone should do this. I've done stand-up about it before, but everyone should just do like an occasional check. My joke used to be like I identify as a fun aunt because it is kind of my... The idea of what a man is does not work for me at all.
Right.
But that's the idea of it. I'm much more comfortable with makeup on. I'm much more comfortable with nail polish on. But I'm also much more comfortable in a suit. So am I a drag queen?
You're Tilda Swinton is who you are.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet, return my text.
Well, he just will have had a lot because of that meme. But yeah. I'm sure when it settles down, he'll have a day when he catches up like you sometimes have to.
I think it's really interesting learning that you like wearing nail polish or learning that you like wearing makeup, but you also like wearing suits and kind of combining bits of both that you like is, I think, something we've heard about before. But when does that start? Like, when do you start feeling like that you can wear makeup and stuff? And I know you had a supportive family, but I'm assuming the world around you hasn't always been like, oh, that's great. We love your nails. Or maybe it has, in which case, great.
No. I mean, there are definitely jumps. I was very lucky. I went to a performing arts school, so I was able to be like a high school.
That explains so much, Reese. Look at you now.
Yeah. But also within like a kind of small, biggity town. So it was this weird bubble where I could go to school with nail polish on. And I wasn't wearing makeup in high school yet, but like probably should have been. And I remember there was a boy at my school who was queer and he used to wear makeup and quite a lot. And I wasn't besotted by him, but I was like, there was something deeply interesting about it. And I remember thinking how brave he was.
Right.
I started doing comedy quite young. So I started wearing makeup on stage, purely because I had bad skin. But then it crept into, I started wearing quite like heavy kind of contoured makeup. This sounds not a great reason, but I started making my hair really big and wearing nail polish because I wanted to stand out amongst a big lineup of comedians.
Yeah, that's just tactics. That makes complete sense.
Yeah, like it was just branding. But then the more comfortable I became, I think it happens a lot with queer people, but it happens with everyone, but queer people, you do something. I feel like this is a broad generalization, but I think people that end up being trans start in drag. not everyone, but you do this thing because you're like, well, I'm going to do this performatively.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to feel like, well, actually, I feel so much more comfortable like this. So you start doing it in the rest of your life.
Yeah.
To a much, much lesser degree, I started doing that with, yeah, makeup and all that kind of stuff. It just made me feel more, I don't know. It's like a weird thing doing external things to feel more like yourself is a really bizarre concept to make people grasp.
Yeah, to try and cement your internal identity. That's really interesting.
Yeah, to do things to yourself to make yourself feel more like yourself is a confusing thing. Like, I don't know, I've always felt like as a queer person, I have a concept of coming out, but I do not have a concept of gender dysphoria. Like, what does that feel like? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What does it feel like inside your chest to know that this isn't right?
That's not something you recognize as your experience.
Not really. I recognize I've had, you know, body dysmorphia, but that's different.
Mm.
But I recognize kind of like doing external things to feel more confident, maybe. Maybe that's more it. Like to feel more.
It's gender expression, isn't it? It's expressing who you are.
Yeah.
And like, I think everyone does that, whether they are the most butch manly man or butch womanly woman, whatever they are. But the way they express themselves through their clothing or through their hair or their makeup or their nails, that is something that shows the world who you are inside. It's a signifier of who you are, I guess.
Hey, we're all born naked.
I haven't thought about that, but you're right. That's horrible.
That was a reference from RuPaul.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah.
Born naked and the rest is drag. Yeah.
Oh, I have heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, there you are.
You're right, though. We've often talked on this podcast about how wherever you are on that spectrum of masculinity, performance is basically everything, isn't it? Almost all of us are performing in some way, either to convince ourselves or something.
Mm.
Like we said about branding, like loads of life is branding, essentially, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
You're trying to realise your own identity or you're trying to convey something to someone else.
When you go on a date, you're branding yourself. Yeah. Like as in when you're putting together the best way that you want to look.
A package of who you are.
That is personal branding.
Absolute hellscape. Ugh.
Oh, it's mad. But even internally, yeah. We're always branding. We're always trying to think, who am I? How do I like to see myself? And then like Reece says, you adopt behaviours which help to see yourself in that way. I think that's just what being a human is to some extent.
Yeah. We always ask about role models, Reece. Mm. You can either look at it from now or like when you were younger. Who did you look up to? Men or women?
Yeah, we've heard a bit about your dad. Were there other men that...
Yeah, I mean, other men, I think I was one of those people, and I think it's pretty common in our profession to have been like exposed to, whether it be like comedy or like parts of culture that you're probably too young to be exposed to. But like John Waters, like I saw that pretty early on.
Yeah.
And was like, that, whatever that is. I remember I saw...
It's brilliant, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like, I didn't see Pink Flamingos or anything, but I remember my dad, because my dad is one of those guys, he loves, I think it's a pretty common, broadly dad thing to, like, put on something and then, like, just watch their kid's reaction to it.
Yeah.
And just be like, hey, how's this going to go? And whereas like, my mum had also shown me, like, the Rocky Horror and stuff, like, some pretty top-shelf cliche queer kid stuff.
Yeah, Rocky Horror is just kind of route one. To queer kids, right?
Yeah. And I remember she fast-forwarded through, like, the kind of bedroom bits in the Rocky Horror, but it was VHS, so I just saw it, but faster. Like, I still knew.
Yeah.
Like, I could still understand something was going on.
VHS didn't allow for secrets, really, did it?
No. You couldn't skip chapter.
No. You just had the idea that sex scenes were always really, really speeded up for some reason.
Yeah. And that's probably a common complaint for my partner now. But John Waters movies, because there was also like a taste there, like a tastelessness, but there's like an aesthetic. I think that's what I've always looked for in like male figures in my life. It's not masculinity. It's like my uncle is another person in my life. He was in a band in Australia who became quite famous for a while. And they were a band called Machine Gun Fellatio. And they had these quite big kind of party hits in Australia.
When was the last word explained to you? How old were you when you learned what that word meant?
Oh, so they were known in our house as MGF.
Right.
And then, yeah, my sister explained it to me. And I remember, I must have known what sex was. You know, like you learn about sex, but you don't know about like the pleasure included in sex or anything like that. So you just know it kind of has this job to make a baby.
Yeah, you just get given the sort of textbook on it initially.
Yeah, and I remember my sister kind of saying to me very quickly and probably uncomfortably, because she's 7 years older than me, I must have just been like, what is it? Everyone keeps telling me to not ask what it is. And she said, well, it's like, and she explained fellatio to me, and I was like, what? Like, it just was so like... Jesus Christ.
How does that make a baby though?
Because all I knew of it, like I think even before then, you don't even really connect your dick to sex yet, really. No. You kind of connect it to peeing, sitting down.
And even when you know what fellatio is, machine gun is not always a phrase you'd think of in the same sentence, maybe.
Rapid? Is it rapid? Oh, is that the reason?
I've never understood it, and my uncle will not give me an answer.
In my head, it's the rapid fireness of it, like a really quick fellatio.
Yeah. Look at you just making all these... For someone who was worried about a segue earlier, you're really making a lot of connections. All
When it comes to sex, Michael's brain works very quickly. So anyway, your uncle.
My uncle was someone in my, and remains to be someone in my life who, I feel like everyone needs this. Someone who, if you're lucky enough to have parents in your life or like whoever your carers are, someone who is in your family who you can bitch about your parents to and they have context for them, but they also know that they're occasionally insane.
Yeah, like an ombudsman, basically, a sort of independent assessor.
Essentially. And I'm now thinking about that's exactly what he was.
A family ombudsman. It's brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was.
For any complaints, please tweet this address.
And because I think you go through a period of your life where you don't trust a single word your parents say. Mm. You just are angry at them for no reason.
And you think, I'm taking this straight to the uncle.
Yeah, and I would go to his house on the weekends. He was renovating his house for like a couple of summers, and I would like, it sounds like something out of an 1800s novel, but like I'd paint his fence or something and we'd like talk about, kind of have conversations like this really, because even though he was my parents' age, I didn't really connect him to my parents. And so, like...
I love the idea of you painting the fence. We've talked a bit previously, I think with Rufus Hound, actually, about how men tend to open up with each other when they're not looking at each other.
Yeah, when they're doing tasks.
Yeah.
So, like, standing, looking away, doing something.
Urinals.
Maybe that's why you want the cubicle. You just don't want to share. You want to keep it all in.
No.
It's why the rest of us stand up to do it. It's the only way we can meet other people.
But yeah, sorry, your uncle painting fences.
And so he was like a big person in my life because also he was the only one in my family who left the town that I grew up in, and he'd lived in Sydney for, and like was in a band and kind of, I think he could see in me, you don't want to be a teacher, you don't want to be like...
you're going to go and do stuff.
You got show business in you. Yeah, and he was able to give me kind of early management. And just kind of guys like that, I've never related to, I keep about to use the word masculine, but... blokey men.
Yeah.
That has just never, I've automatically been not threatened, but just made uncomfortable. And I think it's just by the way I grew up, the town that I grew up in. And even now, I've noticed this thing when I used to do regional tours, like you've done it a lot of times, Mike, like the Melbourne Comedy Festival Roadshow. They do this thing where you get to go to wonderful parts of Australia, but you also get to go to some pretty deep, dark places of Australia, like weird backwater kind of towns.
Yeah, places where the audience are quite different from Melbourne or Sydney.
Yeah, and I would say that I'm an act, and maybe at certain times you might have been an act, where they would describe as an educational act, where they take them to parts of the country that wouldn't usually tune into our type of comedy.
As a social experiment, basically.
Yeah, just to see, like, well, let's see what happens. And there would always be these types of men. I would maybe be in, like, the smoking area of the bar afterwards or something, because I used to smoke. This happened every time. A guy usually about like 21 or 22 would come up to me, and I used to wear like suits and I had really big, almost like cockatoo like hair. And this guy would come up to, and I would always think, oh, he's about to like call me a faggot or something weird is about to happen. And without fail, every time they would always say like, so you live in Sydney, and start just asking me questions about Sydney and like, what's it like there? And over the course of the conversation, I'd think to myself like, oh, you're gay. And like, you're trapped in this.
This is their way of getting into it.
Yeah, and I'm the gayest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah. Mm.
And you're trying to squeeze out some information from... Because, like...
You represent that possible life that they can't access.
Yeah, because even though, you know, I was probably, like, 25 and not a great comedian yet, but I seemed this distant life that was possible for them. And I don't know, it's just kind of... That's what I think when I think of masculinity. It's like you're trapped. You're trapped in this small town, what I see it as.
I think it used to be that.
Yes.
But I think now it's beginning to open to include things like nail polish and makeup. Like, I think the way that you present can be masculinity as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, through this podcast, I've learned so much, especially from non-binary people like Jamie Windust and Travis Alabanza and some brilliant guests we've had on. They talk so clearly about how they are masculine sometimes, and then they're also feminine sometimes, and they're able to kind of combine both. And I think there's so much we can learn from non-binary people in the way that they can present and combine.
This is it. I kind of feel really lost in it sometimes. Mm. I feel like I just kind of did it then. I feel like I have really straight, strong views about things, and then I start to say it out loud. And I think it's a problem of not my age, but where this weird middle generation of queerness, where there was the generation before us, or a little bit before us, that went through, say, the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
There was a real held onto belief of what pride meant and what being queer meant. And then there was this kind of weird aftermath, which I think I'm a kind of child of that. And now we're going through the second kind of revolution of people really getting a hold of who they are and what queerness means to them. And there's this kind of weird middle bit where we're like, well, I don't quite know what the AIDS crisis was, but I was called a faggot at high school. So what do I do?
Yeah. Where do I grasp?
I feel so much dumber about this stuff than people 10 years younger than me. Straight away. 5 years younger than me.
Yeah.
Straight away.
Yeah, because they're establishing a culture and a set of rules, or at least it seems like a very mobile community now.
Yeah.
We often like to look towards the end, or I like to look to the future a bit. We've really talked about how stuff like pronouns and these assumptions will be maybe melted away. But just talking about those communities, like Australia, obviously, away from these really, really diverse urban metropolitan centres like Melbourne, Sydney, Australia has these huge pockets of pretty dyed-in-the-wool, old-fashioned. And, of course, the UK is the same. We both know, like, the examples you gave of Travis and Jamie are people who are operating in, like, Bristol, London. So I suppose what I'm asking is...
Imagine Whitby is what we're asking you to think about.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking is the queer community is, you know, remoulding itself with a lot of confidence, like you talked about. But will we see more acceptance and understanding of it, you know? And I'm not suggesting that everyone in a small town has backward views. Of course not.
No, I'm
interested whether you think, especially applied to a place like Australia, whether we'll see proper integration of these ideas in the next couple of generations.
I certainly hope so. I think there's no denying the internet.
That is a true thing.
But also what comes with the internet is the opposite.
Of tolerance, yeah.
Mm. I mean, it's a really tough question. I truly and deeply hope so.
It is tough because I've asked you to forecast the entire direction of a country's behaviour.
No, and I'll get there and I'll do it correctly and people will hold me to it.
Yeah, we will come back to this in 20 years, by the way. We'll do a retrospective.
That would be a great, it's like 7-Up.
There are shows like Drag Race, though. Drag Race in the UK has made huge strides in the conversation about non-binary people and even just bringing queer people's stories to the forefront.
Absolutely.
And I think Drag Race Down Under is doing a similar thing down there, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to know whether it'll carry across to other parts of the country than our little bubbles.
I think there's an interesting thing that happens with, there's a lot of talk with shows like Drag Race and, you know, even like Queer Eye and those types of things of sometimes the queer community as a whole kind of freak out when we're, feel like we're being, I guess, homogenised is kind of the kind of the selling of the, whereas my opinion is it's just creating understanding. Mm. Because we've had to fight for so long as a community for people to accept us, and then they do. But what comes with that is they also want to make money off us.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what happens. This is my point of view, at least. That happens with everything. And I would hope shows like Drag Race, you know, the fans of Drag Race and shows like Queer Eye as well, queer or not, they really hold on to it, and they also hold it up to great standards that sometimes a light entertainment program cannot hold up to.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when it vaguely disappoints, people start to think, well, this is what happens when you start to try and sell a community this way. And you're like,
But it's more just like, this is what happens when you make a TV show.
This is what happens when you make a TV show. And the fact that it's being made means that, you know, people are starting to understand the queer community, which means that they're starting to accept the queer community.
Yeah.
Like the fact that there's probably some 14-year-old straight girls in regional towns saying, yes, queen, and maybe they don't know the etymology of that phrase. Watch Paris is Burning and you might have a better understanding, but they are aware of what a gay man is, which I am not necessarily sure what a queer person was when I was their age.
Yeah. So the balance is tipping towards knowledge, and then knowledge should lead to understanding more often than not, you'd think.
Yeah. Look, there's always going to be fuckheads.
Oh, yeah.
We all know that.
You can't do anything about the fuckhead quotient that exists.
No.
But you can work around it.
But I truly think, yeah, we are leaning towards a, you know, there was kind of conversations a little while ago in Melbourne where there was a gay bar that they only wanted to let gay people in. And it was just a little bit like, well, gay bars used to be a place where we couldn't go anywhere else. So we would, and look, I also don't want to go to a hens party when I just want to drink quietly with my friends.
Yeah.
And that is a weird thing where like gay bars become
a tourist attraction for people that aren't gay.
A tourist attraction to come and look at a zoo.
This was mentioned by another guest.
Like, it's still sitting in this realm of, you know, we used to have gay bars with blacked out windows because we were scared of being killed. And now the fact that people want to come and hang out in there to then be like, no, only gay people in here. It's like, well, how do you prove it for a start?
Machine gun fellatio, that's how.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but not everyone can do that on demand, we've heard.
Yeah, it's just an interesting, and I don't know what my opinion about it is, but it's just like a strange...
I think the more we strive towards acceptance and inclusion, we have to understand that that acceptance and inclusion has to reach outside our community as well. And inclusion means including everybody. Mm-hmm. That includes straight people.
Otherwise, just basically swapping one form of prejudice for another, in a way.
Well, yeah. That's kind of my view, yeah, overall.
And we need to keep changing the bar.
Yeah.
When we get to a certain place of acceptance, well, let's move it forward a little bit more, not just be like, well, it needs to be this, exactly this. It's not 1974 anymore.
Yeah. Like,
you know, we're not after that specific thing anymore. Things have changed.
So talking of changing the bar, our final question is always how to create a person. Ooh. And what three qualities you build into them. But I quite like that you said earlier, there's always going to be fuckheads. Let's call this section how not to be a fuckhead. What three qualities could you build into someone to prevent them being a fuckhead?
How would you program a non-fuckhead?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're making a non-fuckhead bear.
If you can.
I mean, I'm trying to think of how to break it down, because personally, I think what everyone needs to have is a pretty, like, flexible rudder in their life.
I will say that's the first time we've heard flexible rudder in this question.
As a phrase, yeah.
Yeah, right. It sounds like a kind of Mad Libs.
It sounds also impractical, because surely you want a rudder to be fairly... It's not going to guide you very far if it bends.
But you want to be able to change...
Oh, right. A movable,
yeah. Like, yeah, you don't want to... I don't mean bendy. I think that's just a plastic bag. That's just going to slow you down. But I think to be able to... Exactly what we were just talking about then. I am a 30-year-old queer man, and there's so much stuff that I don't know and that I am already losing hold of an understanding of. And, you know, I meet kind of 21, 22-year-old comics is my example, but just people. They're people first. And they're already so aware of who they are. And I think that comes from a being ready to kind of take in new information and not just be like, well, no, actually, I think you'll find, like, there's just a kind of like, oh, I've not heard that before. That's interesting.
It's like happy to change course.
Yeah. Whereas I think I still occasionally come from a place of like, well, from my experience, you idiot.
I like that phrase. But it doesn't always win hearts. You're right.
I also think, I don't know how this can be put into the person, but to know when to ask for help, I think, is like really important in a person. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a very misused opportunity. Like, as people generally, I feel like humans are very, no, I can do it. I would also connect that to that kind of toxic masculinity as well.
For sure. Men, traditional men, are constantly encouraged to think that way, whether they know it or not.
You know, the cliche of men not taking directions and that kind of thing. Like, and I feel like this has come up a few times, but a self-assuredness, which kind of all spawns back into that. But I feel like I've heard in past episodes of this podcast, people talk about, we live in a wonderful world, but it's pretty shitty.
I would say that's your stand-up in a sentence, Reese.
Yeah. The world is mystical, but it's fucked.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was talking earlier about, like, changing my material up. I reckon that throughout the time I've started to feel a little bit more, like, sure of myself. And I think that it took me, like, 25 years to do that.
And I think it does feed back into the other two as well, because it takes a base level of confidence before you can be flexible in your opinions or vulnerable enough to ask for help. All this stuff comes from a secure sense of who you are, right?
Like, when I'm talking to someone and I realise I don't like them very much, which is... pretty common.
It's happened in the last hour, in fact.
Yeah. I will be asked to be mainly edited out of this. It's usually because, you know, when you see someone having a conversation with someone across the room and you can just tell that they're just not taking in anything that the other person is saying and they're just being really dismissive of them and stuff. And that is so unattractive to me on so many levels.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I mean by that kind of rudder thing of just being like, well, you're wrong.
Yeah.
That is deeply unattractive to me.
Being confident enough to have your mind changed, I suppose, is what we're saying there.
Yeah, without feeling it undermines the person you are.
Yeah.
So basically, know yourself, but be prepared to change your mind
Yeah.
And be ready to ask for help to get from A to B.
Yeah. Be in a coma, I guess, is what I'm saying. Be sure of yourself, but easily moved.
Yeah, that's good, I think. I don't think that's a contradiction. But the missing ingredient is being able to allow people to help you, I reckon. I think those three fit together really nicely, to be honest.
Yes.
There'll still be original issue fuckheads,
yeah,
but there won't be any new ones manufactured.
And eventually the fuckheads will die out and then we'll all be happy.
And that is the aim of this podcast.
There'll be no fuckhead Mark II.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us, Reese, from all the way across the world, actually.
Yeah, thank you've been you for absolutely having me on. Great. I nearly closed by saying, oh, maybe I can have a wine now, but it still is only 10:30 if you think about it. So maybe.
Not even if you think about it. It's just, it's 10:30.
If you agree with the standard time that the world has adopted, yeah. You have a very flexible rudder to argue with that.
Is there anything you'd like to plug, Reese?
Oh, you know.
People can find you on social media if they want to fire weird suggestions at you.
Yeah, just at Reese Nicholson. I've got a special on Netflix if you'd like to watch that. Imagine if you watched my special and it was just all the same things I'd said here, like word for word. I just was clearly just cramming material.
It's a very good special. I enjoyed it.
Yes, Reese's stand-up is highly recommended.
Oh, thank you. And I'm on Drag Race Down Under, which I think is on BBC Three over there.
Yes, it is. Well, I hope the remaining how many days of quarantine go
I've
well?
Got eight more.
Eight more. We might have to have you on again in a few days' time.
Yeah, yeah. And, imagine, and I just had completely different opinions.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Reese.
Thank you, Reese.
Thank you so much, guys.
And as promised, that was Reese. We're getting very good at introducing the guests that we actually have on. Well done, us, for the admin.
We're almost 100%, yeah. If we promise a guest in the intro, they nearly always do materialise. And there it was the case again. So that was Reese Nicholson. Enjoyed that.
Talking of promising, you promised a bit of self-flattery and a bit of self-promotion. So do you want to do a bit of that now?
Well, yes, I don't see it so much as self-flattery as just desperate neediness. I am now, for the foreseeable future, on an extremely long tour of the country doing my stand-up. So if you listen to this podcast sometimes and think, it'd be great if there was 90% less talk about masculinity.
And 50% less Chakraverty.
And a lot less Chakraverty, yeah. Then what are you left with? A stand-up tour by me, and I suppose, I don't know, Michael, I suppose if you put yourself into the shoes of a listener, they might be thinking, well, how can I find out the dates and the ticket links and so forth? Do you think?
Yes, if I was a listener, I'd probably just Google the words Mark Watson comedian tour and hope for the best.
And you've correctly anticipated what I was going to suggest, actually, although I can be more forensic than that. If you go to markwatsonthecomedian.com, you will see a complete list of the dates. The show is called This Can't Be It, and it has been going well, actually, and I would love to see people who are podcast listeners. I mean, not just any podcast listener, don't care about the rest of them, but if you're a fan of Men Cut, one of our very valued listeners, and you come to one of the tour shows, I'm often around afterwards, sometimes I'm signing books and stuff, please do make yourself known to me. It would be lovely to actually meet some of the people that have supported this.
Yeah, and if you come to the one in Newcastle, I'll be there too, so it'll be a Brucey bonus, which will be lovely. Talking of self-promotion...
That's a great idea, actually. Start to promote the tour by promising you as well, and then surely we can't miss anyone.
Talking of self-promotion, if you like this podcast or any other podcasts that we've done, could you please give them a like and a download and a follow and a review and a star? Oh no, 5 stars.
We've been lucky enough to have quite a few new listeners over the past couple of weeks, so do go back and check earlier episodes if you'd like. We've had some amazing conversations with people, and as Michael says, please shower us in whatever sort of format of validation you feel able to. Speaking of our, and I really mean this, valued listeners, we have been lucky enough to get 2 new patrons this week as well, so hello and thank you to Sarah Lou and Anna.
Yes, thank you to both of you. And if anyone else wants to join us, we're on patreon.com/menkindpodcast. And we're also on social media at menkindpodcast. Nice and consistent for everyone there. Yeah, that's it from us, I think.
Well, except to say who we've got next time, I suppose.
Oh, God.
which is actually meant to be the point of this outro, but we've just filled it with admin and neatness instead.
We have the wonderful Ben West, who is a brilliant mental health activist, handsome man. It's a really interesting, different episode, I think. We talk quite in depth about mental health and masculinity, and I think it's one of my favourites, actually.
Yes, it's quite a slightly unusual episode, this one. He's a name that won't be familiar to a lot of listeners, but you certainly will look him up afterwards. And I'm really keen for people to hear this episode because it does have quite a specific focus, which is not something we've talked about that much before, no spoilers, and which I think is really important for people to hear. So, yes.
As you wait for that one, Mark will be busy touring the country. I've got a wedding cake to make for a drag queen, and...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll see you next Monday.
Have a nice week.
Bye.